The name of the program is The Poet and the Poem. I am Grace Cavalieri. Tonight we bring you poetry and music. Migrations is the title. It's a text of poetry I wrote, which was performed by actors on stage at the Franz Bader Gallery. It had dancers, videography, and music. Tonight, of course, in sound, we can only bring you the poems and the music. The metaphor for the piece is motherhood, but the subject is loss. I remarked to someone that women poets seem not to deal with the subject of motherhood very often, probably because they're afraid of trivializing it or fearful to go where Hallmark Card owns all the territory. But what is more universal? What do 100% of women share who are mothers? The end of that experience. When do we abandon our children? The moment we birth them, when they have to live within their own realities. We will always suffer for not being able to shield them from their own reality. The baby is suddenly too big to breastfeed. The baby is now running out of sight. The child now goes to school. The child grows up and goes away because, as I say in one poem, that's the only road there is, away. As a mother, I was never happier and more creative than when I had my own small children. I was complete then. As an artist, to try to make the invisible visible, I had to find all edges of feelings, pain, inadequacy, guilt, and loss, and shine some light on those dark quarters. Even the cave women must have had those feelings, but they didn't have a language for them. So I tried to go for the archetypal experience and create a language, however surreal. Migrations is fiction. Only the feelings are real. We want to give credit to the onstage production where the dance invention was directed by Seta Galenian. The readers you're about to hear are Marilyn Bennett, Melinda Lloyd, and Kathleen Schur. The composer is Vivian Adelberg Rudo. I am the writer. After the performance, we'll have a talk with the composer about how we put this all together. Now we present the poetry and sound of Migrations.
It was the black dress, which fit so perfectly, the long, tight sleeve, the round, close neck, the skirt just right and close upon the hips. In each arm, a baby. In my perfect dress, I hold two babies, one in each arm, two perfect babies. Two others nearby, not crying, never crying. Look how lightly she sleeps, her head so high on the pillow. Any noise disturbs her eyes. Now she shifts her arms, crossed over her chest. How did she manage to roll on the floor, her head on the mattress? Yet she sleeps. I watch her with yet another baby between my legs, pressing down toward light, down toward the light. Having been buried alive once, I know how it feels. I know. Did you see the chain on the front of my nightgown, still connected, which won't be broken? I run to the kitchen sink to tear it before my sister comes down the stairs. But the link stays. The link stays.
Now the wildcat jumps in the refrigerator. I can't get her out. She'll ruin the food. I pull. She holds on with her claws. She breaks her neck and cries like a baby.
Maybe the child was raised as a cat in a cage, made to eat from a dish on the floor, to litter in a box, to soil like an animal. Maybe the child was raised as a cat on a leash. But when the sun crept through the blinds, did it light her eyes? The eyes which stared at the bright slice on the wall? Were they the eyes of a cat or a child who wondered at the warmth on her cheek as she sat curled to sleep in the orange sun? No, the cat would blink, shudder, dart away, wouldn't it? But the child was raised like a cat, could listen, could look out, could want.
In the ache of remembrance, I asked my neighbor to feed the cats, and she forgot to dress them or feed them. A sweet lady like that. Was it my fault? When she had two cats who were sick and dying, when she didn't know what to do, I offered to take them to the vet. Two cats, deprived and starving, obsessively urinating.
Memory is everywhere. It is the babies every night, like fish growing out of pots. Now two sets of twins. But the other baby disappears on a river that runs rivulets and can't be contained. If lack of faith is sadness, I will believe the water can come upon the past so well attended by so many things. And we will feel then what we must not feel again.
This time I hold the twins. They are wearing white dresses with blue hearts. As usual, they are not crying. They run toward me. I kneel to feel their soft bodies flat against mine. First Colleen, then her sister. Now they are asleep in the back of the car. New pacifiers. I'm warming milk in case they roll over. How did we get in Vicky's living room? But she lends me pillows. They run away down the street to play. Safe. They are safe when I call. When I call, they are safe. It's time to change them. It's 11 o'clock. Their naps. After they wake, I have new color forms, new doll houses, bright blue. We wrap up new bottles in blue blankets. Now they have fallen asleep and need changing. Should I wake them so they'll be warm?
Every night in my dreams, the diapers. All night in my dreams, I listen for every sound. I feel their small bodies. They love me, but I must leave them. It is time to leave, to drive down to Florida. But how? I have one crinoline petticoat and a map of Mexico. They know I must leave. But they, as usual, do not cry.
The pain circles my heart, but I make sure they are warm, changed again and fed. They are asleep. I could leave before they wake. They'll never love anyone the way I love them. They are clean, not crying. It's time now. They do not cry. I know I must go. I do not have a coat. I go.
Why would I have left the cat in a house without furniture and people? A cat alone all day in a house without furniture and people. When I went to feed him, he was so thin and dying. But what were his thoughts? A cat left alone to live locked in an empty house without furniture or people? The flies gathered on his food, but he ate it anyway. The cat, with remnants of a half-born kitten, left poking out of its side like a black wing. The cats are in plastic bags in the refrigerator. I hope they don't hurt the food. There is so much to remember.
Can we trust that something which bloomed once will bloom again? Trust bones to grow where nothing was? Reduce everything to just one thing? Say everything worth losing is worth having? Her little finger had no bone. It was called the abandoned finger.
In the mythology of a poem, if you find the head of a child on the floor, you can pick it up with both hands. You can hold it in your hands, and it will sing all night.
Next, there were four cats I cared for in a private home, a mansion, and I took wonderful care, although it was someone else's house. There were toys to play with and chairs to sit in every room, even in the kitchen. They got the best of care until I put on my long gray cape and left. I had spent $52 on candy for them at Christmas, and God knows how much every time we went out. Money was no object for me and my cats. Oh, the stores at Christmas time, the white, candy-covered grapes. I miss it so. But after all, it was someone else's house.
It would make a better story if I said I left because I was restless with a new and vibrant love calling me away. I cannot say I was a young mother on welfare or a poor immigrant. who was once separated from their tears crying at the docks. Perhaps this is not a tragedy at all. I didn't put my children on a railroad car and then run without looking back. Nor can I say that history took them in battle, a political skirmish, or a bank blown up for a radical cause. No, my children went the way every child goes who's ever lived. Away. Because that's the only road there is. The hand with bones which match my own looked like no one else's hand and wore small gloves, played beneath a new palm tree in the yard. Feathers, furs, long gowns holding cups at tiny teas. Now they are artists, women, mothers themselves, and I don't tell about bodies held slippery and wet, or the sweat on each forehead tasted to ease the fever, or their faces when I left the room, as if all that's out of sight will not come back. How did they know behind their eyes that something lost cannot be found? And it is for no good reason we can name, not because of courtroom drama with cameras flashing or a speeding river driving us apart or moving to another country which is green instead of blue, but because something far more distant and prevalent will teach us disconnection of all we love that's flesh. I am the one driving by a house which looks too small, with a tree in front which reaches to the sky, who causes the remarks. Did you see that lady going by? Wonder what she's looking for, where she's been, who she wants, what she thinks she's lost.
Why don't we take what is offered us and ask for nothing more? Even now, as I lose parts of my personality and the children, who would rather have served themselves all along, move out from the center and are gone. And the tree senses the drought and drops its acorns.
Wearing clothes that didn't match, and a blanket over my shoulder revealing a perfect breast, I was walking to Pittsburgh with three children and one stroller. I was leaving a bar when I saw that the big, tall woman had on my red sweater. Oh, it's old. Let her have it. But no, it isn't fair. I got up my courage to tell her if she'd only look to see, she'd find she had on my red sweater. But when I did speak to her, I found I was the one wearing red. Hers, after all, was pink. How embarrassing. She quite rightly was angry enough to throw darts at me, but thank you, God, they turned into yellow birds with beautiful pale white feathers, which barely stung. I have always prided myself on getting along with other women.
At the end of the bus line, where the bus turns around, I am the only one left. In the distance, I see my daughter, Although grown, she seems afraid, like a child running through the lavender night.
Oh, look at the silence.
On the sidewalk, she's dropped her money. I pick up handfuls. My hands are full. I must catch up. What else is here? Kittens and puppies? Small, newborn. How can I carry them all? I'll take the kittens, although my arms are full. She is running ahead, in the distance, in the lavender light. I am alone on the street. I shouldn't have stopped. She's out of sight.
One half a necklace from another time matches yours, and what is the sense of having bodies unless our hands touch? And at the end, instead of an end, what should there be but another beginning, even one we won't remember when we leave this place? Longing for the night which brings together all the broken pieces, our dreams of babies turn in their soil like fish growing out of the pot, rising, rising, falling, falling to the floor. Half-cooked cats emerging from the pot, not yet dead. A fire in the refrigerator, flames too small to put out. Now I have two sets of twins. I wash faces with perfumed rags. One learns to blow her nose. I know a lady so poor she didn't wipe her children's noses. The mucus dried green and gleaming between the nose and lip. She said they never came to her with anything else but need. Where did the babies go, she asked? An inexact world, an equality of love. I put my arms around her and held on.
In the full flesh of morning they settle, like love. A flock of birds settles on me. Shelley didn't want breakfast. She made a cream cheese sandwich for lunch and then ate it for breakfast. She forgot her lunch money, 3 pennies and a dime. She is so small. She is so small in a white sweater. I hold her and watch her go. I taste everything she eats. Did you know that we are moving to Seattle? It will be nice for us, as I've always wanted to see that city. Maybe I can get a job teaching so I can bring lunch money to school and hand it to her and touch her. While platforms of loss rise like floating cells. And where is my husband? Oh, there in the corner, weeping with longing over Valentine's Day.
Call sadness a name. Call it a coyote made of silver howling upward. Call the silver gold and turn it to sun. Make it a sound becoming a sphere. Make the sphere a child, then a sound which hums her into being. She hears Sylvia, Sylvie, silver. Loving metals the way she does, she will spin toward us. Because the river is muddy and wants to be silver again. Because it is polluted and catches on fire. Because she can turn fire to gold.
Like all good souls, she thinks the world is her fault. Naturally, she's frightened to fall out of sound into skin. Yet, looking from where she is, she sees something shine between rocks. Within thin, clear spaces, it is glittering. Trusting, like the animal she will become, she drops from light to light. There are two shining rings waiting for her. Two more stars float in the river, unreflected. They need her silver and gold. How else can they transform? How else give off light? She comes. Did they spill something on their skirts?
Did they change their skirts?
How many blue skirts do they have?
Did they remember to eat?
Did they forget to eat?
Where was I when they had so many blue skirts or new dresses?
Now they're in new dresses going to school.
Ready to go to school.
How many times did they change their skirts before they went to school?
Remember.
Remember to eat.
Blue skirts.
So many blue skirts.
Forget.
Going to school.
New dresses.
Change their skirts.
Remember.
Went to school.
School.
Did they remember?
Remember.
Do they have?
Where was I?
Forgot to eat.
Where was I?
Change their skirts.
Where was I?
How many blue
Where?
Skirts?
Going.
Something on their skirts.
Remember.
Going to school.
Blue skirts.
How many times?
New dresses.
Went to school.
Change.
Where was I?
Forget.
Forgot to eat.
Where was I?
Did they remember?
Where was I?
Blue skirts.
Blue skirts.
Change their skirts.
Remember.
Spilled something.
To school.
New dresses.
Where?
Go to school.
Remember.
Where was I?
Forget.
So many blue skirts.
Where was I?
Change their skirts.
Blue skirts.
Went to school.
Before school.
Going to school.
Where was I?
Ready to go.
Where was
Did they remember?
Remember.
Do they have?
Where was
How
I?
Many blue skirts?
Where was
Change
I?
Their skirts?
Where was I?
Something on their skirts.
Forget.
What did they do with their tears? I was just recovering from being well when Shelley showed us five bites on her arm. Five in a row with dark lines between. Oh my God, blood poisoning. We've got to get her to a doctor. Get her a shot. A shot. Although I know doctors are like lifeguards living every day in dread of testing their skill. Still, she needs a doctor. When the telephone call came, inviting us to tea, why didn't the lady hear me say it was an emergency? The lady who thinks finding something to do every minute of the day is a problem. Why didn't she hang up and leave us alone? Why did she come to the door still wanting to keep me from my children, claiming they didn't need me? Two things I'd always recognized, myself and the children. When everything else soared out of sight, now the children are gone. What does all this mean? She said. Don't ask me, I answered. I don't even know the person who wrote it.
I remember the train ride with the blind lady, where we each found out something about ourselves. She asked me what beautiful means, and if she looked that way. I told her about the child who died in my arms with an article stuck in her throat. It was the word I. I told her about the baby who disappeared from the back seat of the car where she had been playing. When I picked her up, I couldn't wipe the dirt from her face. I told about the twins who were borrowed and how I feared the new owners would take them and keep them in playpens without their favorite snacks. Where do the babies go when they grow? Like trains, out of the tracks they come. But where do they go? She replied that at my age, why did it matter? She asked how people know what beautiful means. I told her that because of pain in losing my children, my eyebrows grew together, forming a beard. She said if she didn't see it, it didn't happen, and to consider it all a passing fancy.
No one thing is good all the time. No idea. No cat. No cat is good all of the time. Did you notice how we are punished for wanting it? For the life of a single cat is a siren which goes out, a color which moves on. It is too much responsibility to have in this room with the school bus that calls across the yard. Its life will never have a book bearing its name. At least humans can give each other love. Go to college. Keep cheerful. Believe there is something to learn. Gather. Say, this is an asset. Go to the doctor. Avoid the place in the woods. But one day, you'll see. The cup will not hold its handle, and the yellow cat will not be on the desk, on the stair in the sun, in the chair at twilight. Only stray cats will be at the door. See that one, crossed with a pinto, his face like a claw, dying, mouth open, crying for our love. Millions of gaseous vertebrates carry on that way. I know a cat lady who had 60 cats. She named them Soft, Frightened, Parody, Greed, Melody, Honest, Magic, Crucial. I do not remember the names of the rest. They were put to death to protect themselves.
Crawling on my hands and knees over the Brooklyn Bridge to reach my children, and the bridge was going up. All these matters are simultaneous. How I threw away your poem and you died. You forgot what I always said. If anyone else can do it, don't bother. All those years, I said you were lying. And when you finally admitted it, it didn't matter. I didn't know your negativity belonged to you. I thought somehow it belonged to me. It's hard to leave in cases like this, especially when you find there is no place else to go.
Each year this time, we leave a box to burn our tiny icons, idols of belief, angel, heart, and coin.
Next year, I promise when it is opened, there they will be inside, laid to rest, but not destroyed. There they will be, untouched. Alive. Each year this time, we start again.
First, we lay carefully the velvet smooth to rest on top the angel of guilt. It gathers what last light we see beneath its lid, and in the center, upright, unarmed, will be a symbol most deceiving. A stained and satin heart, still beating.
Beside it, the coin, of all things wrong, which, if we spent on forgetting, might bring us no more happiness.
Now, it is time to close the lid, lay the box within its ground, preparing branches, tested for ability to change to heat inside a hole dug deep.
A fire that's slow still works its job, and once again we go away and pray for a safe burning.
And now my daughter has her home, baby, and brought him to work. He was so heavy, he struggled under the blanket. She could hardly carry him. I tried to help by lifting him in my arms, but he was so heavy, someone else had to help her. I had so many papers on the floor. I kept folding and folding his blue shirt, but the sleeves would never match. I finally handed it over. I never had a son. I never had a son.
You have been listening to Migrations, written by Grace Cavalieri, with music by composer Vivian Adelberg-Rudo. The readers were three actors, Marilyn Bennett, Melinda Lloyd, and Kathleen Scherr. This is an original text of poetry, and the music soundtrack is by a composer who lives in Baltimore and who has worked with me on some other projects combining words and music. Vicky is in our studio right now, and I thought it'd be nice to have a chance to talk to her, because although we composed this over the phone and through grabbing each other in the hallway and as we ran through the night, I have never really had a chance to sit down and analyze and ask Vicky how she arrived at the gestation and how certain things developed. And so today is my moment, and this is the time, and it is now. I'm Grace Cavalieri. The program is The Poet and the Poem. The performance piece is Migrations. Vicky, to take you back in time, I handed you a pile of papers and said, here is a bunch of poems which are all related. They are about motherhood. They are about loss. They are pretty weird. They are surreal. They came out of my nighttime mind. Some came from dreams. It's created a rich soil of mythology, but it's pretty weird. Now please write music.
Some of it's weird. It's beautiful. It's beautiful because we could feel your love. And since we could feel your love, it was beautiful. It was heavy, too. There are a lot of things. If you remember, at the very beginning, you said it was a long howl. And I said, no. Well, you can't have a howl. You can't cry without love. You have to put the love in. And so I put the love in. And then one day you called and said, Vicky, you've got to put the love in. I said, don't worry. I already put the love in. But I took your poems, and I really did get inside everyone. Everyone became my body, really. And I just did the sound that I thought was from you. It was not my thing. It was your thing. I really felt like I was you at the time.
How can you be so generous?
I wasn't generous. I was reading your poetry.
So you read the poem.
Yeah.
And what was
it became mine.
Meditative
I would
state.
Read it one day, and then I would sleep on it at night. And then the next day, I would get up and do it. I did that. It sort of went like that, although I may have taken two or three more time for each one. But I would always sleep on it. I never directly started anything.
So you absorbed it and you mm-hmm. slept on it, literally.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then the first thing you did in the morning was to approach what you had surrounded
well,
yourself
no,
with.
Well, no, I just heard it. You know, I really did hear the things, and I just knew what to do.
How do you hear the music in your mind?
It just
I wanted
is there.
To ask Mozart, but how
you
is
do.
It?
You do. You do.
You
it
hear
does.
The, you hear the melody?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, sure. And I became... The poems and I were one. Now, Shelley Eating Cream Cheese and I, of course, became one because that was, to me, love of child. I never had any daughters. I only had sons. So it was interesting what, for you, I was you at the time when I wrote the music, was the love of watching your child just do normal, everyday things because you were just a plain, ordinary mom, and she was a plain, ordinary kid. And plain, ordinary moms love their plain, ordinary kids. And that's what it was saying in the poem. And I thought, this is gorgeous. This is so beautiful, simple, but beautiful. I was really blown away by that poem. And your red sweater was hysterical. It was awfully funny. And I just had so much fun with that diz-bang of a woman. I mean, that was just so much fun. She was really screwy in that poem. So I was just having a great time being screwy with the tape. So each time it changed. And as a composer, I do love to change each thing. And so each one gave me a chance to change. And I had been working on some rock things. And so like alchemy, the one with chemistry, sparkles and the sun and the shimmering, I knew just where our symbols were on my tape deck. Not my tape deck, from my synthesizers. So I just sped the whole thing up and made the shining silvery sounds from the cymbal sounds. And it was just I had the technique because I knew the equipment very, 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 very well. And it came.
Was it fun?
It was wonderful. I really enjoyed doing it. It was a lot of things. I cried at some of them.
How tired did you get?
I don't remember getting tired.
Because it
seems I remember getting carried away. I did cry. Showing the cream cheese just made me cry. I couldn't read it to my husband without crying.
I can't listen to it today.
Yeah, I said, listen to this. And then I would start reading it. And when I did, I would start to cry. Always. Because I thought it was just so incredibly beautiful.
But we always cry for ourselves. Our tears are always for ourselves. Why? They come from our body.
I was you at the time.
That's right. But is that what it takes?
I only had sons. I didn't have any daughters.
But is that?
I didn't cry at my children having cream cheese. We did clubhouses and hammering and making noise. We were into noise and dirt. We went into cream
I know.
Cheese.
That's why I love you. You're so different from me.
Noise and dirt.
Well, the first thing you remember that.
Tea parties. I can't even imagine tea parties.
You're pretty wild as a mom. Now your sons are married.
And they have daughters. Isn't that a riot? Now I have granddaughters. Now I can go and I can't believe that I will do tea parties with them. I'll have to teach them how to hammer, too.
In 1975 or 6.
But when they eat cream cheese, I'll think of you.
I sent you a poem.
We don't do cream cheese. It's full of fat.
That's right. I sent you a poem, and it said, I hear hats in the wind. And you didn't respond right away. And then pretty soon, I got a phone call from you. You may not remember this. It was almost 20 years ago. And you said, guess what? I hear hats in the wind. And I knew we had a marriage. And you said, hey, I can enter your reality. I can enter your psychosis. We can have a folie à deux. I can get into your skin and feel what you're feeling. And we did create a stage work in, I think it was 72
right,
or 74.
They're running one of the major songs on that on television in Baltimore right now, actually. And it's exquisite. They put video to it.
No, this was the first thing we did, Best of Friends.
Oh, nope, sorry. 1972,
wasn't it?
That was a long time ago.
74, maybe.
Right.
Lenny just got married and he was a baby then.
Oh, yeah, that was a long time. He was screaming in it. It bothered him at night.
He woke him up at night when we were rehearsing,
right.
I remember
that. After that, he wanted to break up all my equipment. Yes, I remember that.
So he was a kid and now he's married. That's so right. It's been a few years. But that was a stage presentation at Notre Dame College, and that was pretty neat. And you used train whistles. You said to me, Grace, what's this about? And I said, well, it's about the feeling at night when there's a train whistle in the distance and you're alone. And by God, that wound up on the soundtrack. That's still a gorgeous soundtrack. Since then, what did we do next? We did three or four Portrait of Friend was next.
We did that. We did a
String
chamber,
of Pearls.
Chamber orchestra piece together.
Healing Place.
That's
about Debbie Bendit's death.
Ensemble piece. I enjoyed about doing these pieces is that each poem was different, and it gave me a chance as a composer to have a wide variety of styles. And I liked your bizarre, whatever you call it, like the head sings. Now, for a composer, that's great. I have my head singing. Ah, that wonderful noise. That's the head singing. I love that. I thought, oh, great. Listen to the head sing. So I loved getting a chance to be very expressive. And your poems are very expressive. They're very deep, and they're brilliant poems. And it really it gave me a chance to be very versatile. I really did feel inside of each poem as I wrote it. I really did.
Each is a tiny world that you entered.
It's true. I really was. I mean, I really did. I wore those poems. I absolutely wore them as my skin.
You made them belong to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The feelings.
The feelings.
And the feelings belong to everyone, really, or I guess to all kinds of people that love anything.
We don't know where these feelings came from. They're certainly not the feelings of a person in present day, because I had kind of a happy, uneventful life raising my four daughters, and it was more fun than I've ever had. I think since they've gone, I've written 18 plays, then had them produce 6 books, much material, but nothing has filled the emptiness of raising them and that creativity, which I loved so much and can't replace.
You see, it's universal. It belongs to everyone. It's not a private thing. It belongs to everyone.
And the deeper we go personally, the more universal it always is.
Well,
the name of the program is The Poet and the Poem. My composer is Vivian Adelberg Rudo. I am Grace Cavalieri. The title of the piece was Migrations, and it was read previously by actors Marilyn Bennett, Melinda Lloyd, and Kathleen Scherr. It was made possible by the Painted Bride New Forms, which comes out of Philadelphia. Our engineer is Sam Woodson. The station is WPFW.